message to Israel. Shalom Aleichem. Peace be unto you. Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Hear, O Israel, our God, the Lord, is one. This is the voice of the message to Israel.
Shalom Aleichem. I trust that God's true peace through Yeshua HaMashiach will be your portion today. The year was 605 BC. Two Middle Eastern superpowers faced each other on the field of battle to determine who would control the Middle East. On the one side was Egypt under the command of Pharaoh Necho. This power had been dominant for quite a number of years. On the other side was Babylon, under the leadership of Crown Prince Nebuchadnezzar, whose expansive policies and practices just had to be stopped. The battle took place at Carchemish, on the upper Euphrates River. The outcome of the battle would have momentous implications for Israel and the city of Jerusalem. The Egyptian army was soundly defeated, and they retreated south, back to the homeland of Egypt. This retreat left the door to the interior of Israel wide open. By August of 605, the Babylonians were in control of Jerusalem. Nebuchadnezzar's joy in victory was cut short with the news of his father, King Nabopolassar's death. Nebuchadnezzar immediately rushed home to secure his succession to the throne. It is believed that around September 6 or 7 in the year 605, Nebuchadnezzar was crowned king. 105 years before this time, the Assyrians, whom Babylon had defeated in battle, had stripped the northern kingdom of Israel of its population and had relocated them to other parts of the Assyrian Empire. The Babylonians now adopted the same practice. Nebuchadnezzar carried back to Babylon with him not only of the treasures of the temple, but the cream of Jewish society, young men, the very future leadership of the Jewish nation. Among these early captives were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Upon arriving in Babylon, the treasures rifled from the Jerusalem temple were placed as an offering of thanksgiving in the temple of Marduk, the chief god of Babylon. It has been suggested that in doing this, Nebuchadnezzar declared two things. First, his gratitude to Marduk for the victories he had gained, and secondly, to exalt Marduk and humiliate Jehovah by asserting Marduk's superiority. In the pagan way of thinking, no nation could ever be conquered if their god was more powerful than the attacking army. What Nebuchadnezzar did not know at that time, but which is recorded for us in Daniel chapter 1 and verses 1 to 2, is that the Most High God, who had given Judah and Jerusalem into the hands of the Babylonians. As the years would roll by, Nebuchadnezzar would learn that Yahweh, Jehovah, was the Most High God, and that he gives the kingdoms of the earth to whom he wills. Jehovah was preparing the stage for further revelations of himself and of what he had planned, not only for Nebuchadnezzar, but also for all the nations of the earth. Shortly after their removal to Babylon, Daniel and his three friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, were selected for specialized training in the language, customs, culture, and sciences of Babylon. What is noteworthy is that this action literally fulfilled a prophecy made to King Hezekiah of Judah some 100 years earlier. Following a visit to the Jewish king's court, the prophet Isaiah foretold, "Behold, the days come, that all that is in thine house, and that which thy fathers have laid up in store until this day, shall be carried to Babylon. Nothing shall be left. And of thy sons that shall issue from thee, shall they take away, and they shall be eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon." These Jewish young people were given the best education that Babylon offered at that time, one that would last 3 years. During that education, the Babylonians brought extreme pressure to bear upon these young people to force them to conform to Babylonian society and Babylonian way of thinking. Their Jewish names that honored Jehovah were replaced with names exalting pagan gods. They were no longer to think of themselves as Jewish and loyal to Jehovah. Now they were to think of themselves as the servants of the gods of Babylon. Their education exposed them to such anti-god subjects as astrology and pagan mythology, much of which today is present in the so-called New Age movement. Would their faith in Yahweh remain strong under conditions like these? Even the Babylonian diet brought their Torah-based faith in Jehovah into conflict with their overlords. Much of the palace diet included foods forbidden by the Torah. Then there was the fact that palace food was probably offered in sacrifice to Babylonian gods before it was eaten. For these Jewish young men to participate would have meant turning their backs on the instructions of Yahweh. Would their faith remain strong? No. Could their faith remain strong? The answer to that question is revealed in verses 8 to 16 of Daniel chapter 1. Daniel and his three friends found themselves in a dilemma. If they yielded, then they would be Torah disobedient, and God would be angry. Should they refuse the king's diet, then they would come under the wrath of earth's greatest despot. It would have been easy for Daniel and his three friends to rationalize their way out of the dilemma. Even today, young people away from home, church, and synagogue find themselves rationalizing their way out of being obedient to what they know to be right and proper and true. Arguments such as, "Surely God cannot expect total obedience in every situation." They could also have blamed their present predicament on God, and so saw themselves as being really not to blame for their situation. Then again, they could easily have said, "Think about the witness we could have in the high places of the court." These and many other rationalizations could have been brought forth to ease them out of the dilemma in which they found themselves. Thankfully, and with praise to the Most High God, these four young men did not yield to such thoughts. We read in Daniel chapter 1 and verse 8, "But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank." In this decision, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were of one heart with Daniel. All four of them were ready to put their faith in Jehovah on the line. They were ready to trust him to be faithful to the promises of his word, even as it was given to the father of Israel, even Jacob. "And behold, I am with thee, and will keep thee in all places whither thou goest," was the promise of God. The great lawgiver Moses, speaking for God, said to the nation, just before they entered the promised land, "Be strong and of a good courage. Fear not, nor be afraid of them. For the Lord thy God, he it is that doth go with thee. He will not fail thee, nor forsake thee." And at the dedication of the temple, the great King Solomon was heard to pray, "The Lord our God be with us, as he was with our fathers. Let him not leave us, nor forsake us." With the decision to be loyal to God's teaching, Yahweh begins to direct his young followers through the proper channels. Requests were made to the authorities, and the situation, so volatile at the beginning, became an opportunity for God to demonstrate to these young people, at the very onset of their careers, that he was sovereignly in control and that he would not fail them. The outcome of this test became the foundation for the next 50 years of witness for God in the very center of the world's greatest pagan society. God remained faithful to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Even today, God continues to be faithful to his promises. Israel continues as a distinct people, though greater civilizations have ceased to exist. His promise of sending Mashiach, the Savior of the world, has been fulfilled. The Deliverer has come. The suffering servant of Isaiah's prophecy has paid the atoning sacrifice, and today we await his glorious return for those who have repented of their sin and who have received him as Messiah, Savior, and Lord. May the God of Daniel touch your heart and mind to trust wholly in his Son, Mashiach. Shalom.